So, anyway, this actually is not my story. It's actually my wife's. She was an intern back in 1985, working on the Word program for the AT&T 3B5 microprocessor, a mini computer. So she's working late one evening, and there's this madman starts running down the halls, leaping at the ceiling tiles, trying to knock them out. And she's like, who is this crazy person walking down the hall? So she goes to the person in the office next to her, who's also working late, the name of Libby. And she's like, so Libby, who is this guy running down the hall? Libby's like, oh, that's my brother. Oh, okay, well, this is back in the early 80s, and there's a lot of family relations who've worked at Microsoft historically. He says, okay, it's whatever, it's Libby's brother then, okay. And then she noticed the nameplate on Libby's door. Libby Gates. Yeah, it was Bill running down the hall trying to knock the ceiling tiles out. And it's like one of her favorite memories of Bill from all these years, and he has left just an incredible impression of this guy just trying to, just leaping up and doing it. So, anyway, that's my favorite Bill story.
Okay, so my favorite Bill G memory. This was, oh my gosh, probably almost 15 years ago in the mid-90s, and I was managing WinHEC. It was in San Francisco, and Bill was our keynote speaker. And schedules got kind of messed up, so at the last minute, we had to find a quick way to get him from a earlier speaking commitment in Carmel over to Moscone. He didn't have time to drive, so the only way we could do it is to rent a helicopter. So he was going to helicopter in, and then we needed to find a public helicopter landing pad in downtown San Francisco for him to land, which, as you can imagine, there's not a whole lot of them. So we finally, through the help of the city, found a place out by, I think it was Golden Gate Park, where he could land. And then the city said, well, you know, since your time frame is so tight, we'll provide an escort. So I said, okay. And back then, Bill didn't have big security or anything, so it was literally me jumping in a rental car, driving over to this helipad, waiting for Bill. So his helicopter lands, he and his assistant hop in my car, and then I notice there's the San Francisco motorcycle cop there. So he comes up to the car and says, oh, I'm your escort, you know, follow me, stay close. And I said, all right. So we take off, and we're driving, and we're I'm briefing Bill on what has happened with WinHEC and what's going on, and we're driving to the city and talking, and Bill's like, why do we have an escort? And I said, I'm not sure. The city wanted to send it, you know, whatever. And as we're driving, then I notice the cop's starting to go faster and faster, and I'm getting further behind, and then he's, you know, motioning me to pick up the speed. And then we start going through red lights. And so then I realized, well, that's why the cop wanted me to stay close, because he's got his siren going now, and in order for us to get to Moscone in time, we're blowing through red lights. And I'm driving white-knuckled thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to, like, get in an accident, and I'm going to be the responsible for hurting Bill, and I'm so going to get fired. And I'm looking over at Bill's assistant, and he's just kind of looking at me like, what the heck? And I'm looking over at Bill, and he is leaning over from the back seat into the front with this big old grin on his face, telling me, go faster, Joan, go faster. So here we are, the last 2 miles, we're zipping through red lights. We get to Moscone about 20 minutes before he's supposed to get on stage. But I got him there safely, not a scratch on him.
Well, I kind of always reckoned that I had an unfair advantage when it came to dealing with Bill. You know, it was the accent, really. I mean, if there was one TV program that Bill Gates was almost bound to have watched as a kid, it was Star Trek, right? I mean, he had to watch Star Trek. So I always had the feeling that, you know, if I was in a Bill G meeting and things got a bit hairy, I could always play the Scotty card, you know? Why can't we ship it either? But Captain, we're at Warp 6 already. The engines will not take anymore. I always reckoned that that would touch some deep subconscious memory in Bill G, and it might buy me some time. However, of course, it backfired once. Bill was speaking at the CHI conference in Seattle and asked me to go on stage and talk about the future of reading. And, you know, how I usually start this thing is you know, talk about how we learn to read since, you know, we're 3 or 4 years old. And the learning that we went through happened so long ago that we've forgotten all about it. Anyway, I'm up on stage with Bill when I start off by asking him, what age were you when you learned to read? Or, what age did you learn to read, I think is what I said. It's one of these things, you know, George Bernard Shaw always talked, is supposed to have said that Britain and America were two countries separated by a common language. And it's just one of these phrasing things, you know. So I said, what age did you learn to read? And Bill looked at me totally blankly and said, what? I said, what age did you learn to read? He said, I don't understand. So this is twice I've asked a question. I can't get beyond even the intro to start my speech, and I'm really panicking. There's like 600 people in the audience. Everybody's watching, and Bill can't understand what I'm saying. You know, this is kind of the point where you either throw up or you grab your security blankie and curl up in a fetal position. So I kind of took a deep breath. I turned to the audience and I said, I think we're having an accent problem. And very slowly I said, Bill, how old were you when you learned to read? And he said, I was about 4. Big sigh of relief, and we went on. And the talk went great, but it just shows you that, you know, sometimes what you think is an advantage backfires on you. You do not want to be on a stage with Bill in front of an audience of hundreds of people and the thing just freezes, you know. I mean, the only worst thing is if you're doing a demo with, on stage with Bill and something crashes. Anyway, that's kind of one of my fonder memories of working with Bill over the years.
Hi. I recently had a chance to spend a day with Bill at TechEd in Orlando. And after doing the keynote, Bill and I hosted a lunch with about 15 of the most influential, you know, community leaders, right? Sort of regional directors, MVPs and the like. And going in, I wasn't sure, you know, what the theme was going to be for that discussion. Sort of, you know, hey, you know, it's a chance for people to say hello to Bill and to get a chance to ask him or tell him or whatever this kind of thing, right? But the thing that was fascinating to me was to see how the conversation quickly morphed to talking about, like, you know, philanthropy and, you know, education and healthcare. And as much as, you know, Bill is excited and passionate about the topic, it was equally interesting to see that the community leaders were all very passionate about that, and more importantly, wanting to find out from Bill what he thought about how we could take IT and IT skills and be able to put that to good use in, you know, be it, you know, education or healthcare or whatever else, you know, that people are excited about. It was a very good conversation, and I was really glad that, you know, the people in the room talked about that, and it was just fantastic to see Bill get all fired up and excited and passionate about, like, you know, hey, and particularly as he's making his transition to spend more of his time with the Gates Foundation, I thought that was a great opportunity for people to hear how he thinks about things. And one of the things that he said that really caught my attention was this. He said that, like, you know, hey, whenever a tragedy strikes anywhere in the world, you know, all of us, you know, are pretty good in terms of, you know, opening up our hearts and minds and, more importantly, wallets so that we could go help. But he said, like, you know, hey, that's great. But the thing that is even more impactful is if we could do something similar ahead of, you know, when a disaster strikes. For example, you know, if we could go, you know, put an infrastructure or a framework in place that is going to help, you know, help us all do a much better job of responding to a crisis, then that has a far-reaching impact. And that I thought was a good way to think about it, because sometimes, you know, day in and day out, we don't think about that. And when a crisis, you know, comes to our face, we are, you know, reacting as opposed to being more proactive. So that was, you know, one of the moments that I'll cherish, you know, for the rest of my life in terms of, you know, my interactions with Bill. I also want to take this opportunity and tell Bill, you know, hey, thanks for everything, Bill. And more importantly, all the very best as you make the transition to the foundation, you know, starting July 1st. Thank you.
Bye, Bill, and lots of luck with the foundation. And it's great to see that you've got Jeff Rakes there, who you couldn't hire anyone better.
So, Bill, thank you for all the leadership that you provided for Microsoft. And as a longtime employee, it was just so fun watching all the changes Microsoft went to, and it is one of my favorite places in the world, and we're going to miss you. Thanks.
Bye, Bill. going to miss you. This place will not be the same without you.